Guardian Unlimited.
My name is Philip Rosedale, and I'm the founder of Linden Lab, and therefore Second Life. And I'm in London at the moment for meetings. I had not gotten to the UK and Europe in quite some time, so here I am.
Is there such a thing as, if I was to ask, how big is Second Life as a sort of landmass, yeah, given that you talk about
462 square miles, which makes it a lot bigger than London, I believe.
That's very precise. I'm impressed.
It's something like that. It's about 11, and then it's about 1,100 at this point, bigger than this, but 1,100 square kilometers. So it's a tremendous amount of space. It's about 100 terabytes of user generated content, which is staggering, you know. So that's 100,000 gigabytes of data. The land mass, which is also growing at, you know, 5% a month or something, is that big now. So big that you couldn't even, if you had a helicopter or something and you flew around the edge of the island, so to speak, you wouldn't be able to see it expanding. I mean, it would be expanding too fast for you to really figure out what was going on.
It's a landmass.
We have 18,000 server CPUs now.
Really?
Yeah. Much more than this room. Full of servers.
Are these all in one place or sort of dispersed?
No, they're dispersed.
Yeah. Data centers.
3 data centers in the United States. But again, they need to be here.
Yeah.
Because 55% of our traffic is the UK and Europe.
And are they here yet, or is that something you're working
on? Not here yet. We're working on that. That's right. Part of what we announced with IBM. It's the same technology to allow us to also run banks of servers with partners here. And we're actively working on that right now.
Is it a struggle to stay ahead of the growth? I mean, do you worry sometimes that it's going to all freeze up because you've run out of memory?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's we're a technology company at heart, so it's our core competence to not have that happen. But we grow a lot. I mean, it's difficult to sustain that much growth. Most people don't realize how complicated the software is and how big we are. You know, the reason why there's not more competition right now is not because the economic opportunity isn't there. We're 250 people and we're profitable, so we're making a lot of money. So there's all kinds of impetus to jump into this space. But the fact that you don't see people doing just what we're doing right now is in part because, and this isn't to say that people aren't going to do it, I'm just saying it's not like a social networking site where two guys in this room with coffee and pizza for 30 days and you've got your social networking site, okay? They don't do that and build Second Life. I mean, it's literally the scale of an operating system. It's just gigantic. I mean, it has so many systems that you have to put together to make it work. So, you know, it just means that there's going to be fewer, larger competitors, probably.
That's very interesting. So if your total capacity, your sort of memory at the moment is 100%, what percentage are you using? I mean, how close are you to the limit?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I would say that there's a couple of bottlenecks. Theoretically, the grid, as we say, the simulators, could hold a staggering number of people. Well, it would be about roundabouts 18,000 times, say, 50. So that would be a million people could be logged on at one time. And right now, it's only 60,000 people that are logged on. But it's an amazing amount of the challenge is some of the central systems, some of the databases and stuff are constantly at their limits, or closer to, you know, 75% of their capacity limits. And that's the place where we're constantly working to try and scale those systems, decentralize them, put more databases online. It's a hard system to keep up and running.
When you talk about that virtual landmass and you're so precise with the figure, what are we actually talking about? We're talking about a sort of...
Each server.
Yeah.
It's a map.
Yeah.
If you look down on it, it's a map with all these...
So it's
big space.
The landmass you're describing is like saying the landmass on Google Earth, is it?
Yeah.
It's just
exactly.
One is a photo of the real world, the other one is the virtual creation.
The other one is the virtual stuff. There's 100 million, or there's hundreds of millions of user-created objects. So this is like an object. You know, this chair is a couple of pieces. hundreds of millions of those in this thing. It's that big. It's 460 some square miles, and it is the density of London. So it has, you know, rooms like this, and so it's exactly each server CPU that I mentioned, the 18,000 of, is 16 acres. So it's, you know, about the size of, you know, this whole hotel, or a bit larger, the whole city block. Each server is that size, and they sit next to each other, so they connect together like puzzle pieces. So when you're walking around in Second Life, you can't see the servers start and stop. So that's how there's 18,000 of those machines.
And do you worry that somebody would find it an incredible coup to sort of hack into this and try?
People try to hack into it every day.
Bring the whole world.
Actually, I think that's one of the good things. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like when you're in a place where everyone's constantly trying to attack you, and you can fend it off. Like that's the right place to be. Where, you know, the best built systems on the internet are systems that if there was a way to exploit them, they would be exploited immediately. You know, so like SSL, HTTP, HTTPS. All these different systems like that. We're the same thing. We have a team of people who does nothing all day long, every day, but fight off those attacks. This is the most interesting system to attack. So people are constantly trying to do it.
Do you have any sense who's doing the attacking? Is it the teenager trying to have fun, or is it the sort of the Russian criminal gang trying to make money?
It's both, but it's probably a little more the teenager trying to have fun. The Russian criminal gangs, you know, you have to use different... That's more anti-fraud, anti-money laundering, credit card theft, things like that. We've built world-class systems to beat that. We've had to do the same best practice stuff that has been done by companies like PayPal, where that you've got to... You just have to do a lot of stuff right to beat that. That, by the way, is another reason why, like, there's not so much competition. Because, you know, there's, like, 15 people who all they do is that. So it's not a small... you know, problem. You just can't set up currency system like this, you know, a microcurrency, without building in a lot of stuff to it. So,
yeah. Do you hope to greatly enhance the look of Second Life as time goes on? I mean, would you like it to eventually look more like PlayStation 3, look like sort of, you know, the most incredible graphics ever?
Yeah, in fact, some of the latest stuff that we've done has been to substantially upgrade the graphics. There's a mode now, it's called Windlight, where you can go in the latest version, and it's got this little, especially if you want to just take a beautiful picture, because sometimes it'll run too slowly on your computer, you can turn up the resolution, and you can see the reflections of things in the water. The sky has these amazing clouds, and it's really beautiful. You know, there's some nice movies and stuff of it online that are stunning. You know, people are starting to build more artistic content now. We also did a thing that allows you to take objects and kind of deform them in almost any way. You know, like a pincushion or something. Like you can just do just about anything to them, and that has allowed people to build amazing new content. So you know, you see like a Herman Miller actually makes their real chairs and sells them to you at Second Life. You can buy real Herman Miller chairs. Totally cool. That was an interesting case. As I understand it, there was a lot of people making Herman Miller chairs. And they got in there and they kind of got together with them and they said, look, let's make it a real Herman Miller chair, you know. Rather than just treating it as a copyright infringement case, which they could, you know, go after them. People would have to stop doing it. They went in and they said, oh, okay, let's figure out a franchise model or a model. They figured out a model of some kind for making the real chairs.
And how ambitious are you for this? I mean, do you sort of think and hope that Second Life might effectively become the web that...
Yes. Not only do I think that, I think that it'll become more pervasive, especially if we open it up and standardize it. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that this one company will control all those servers. No, we're working on systems so that you can have the servers outside of our company. But yeah, it will become the... I mean, I believe that what we're working on right now will become a more common way of using the internet to retrieve information, essentially, or to interact, transact. And the reason for that is that it has no language dependencies. You don't have to click hyperlinks. So it doesn't have language dependencies, and it doesn't, you know, it always has other people there, which is just inherently more appealing to us. You know, no matter what you're doing, there's always someone around you can ask a question to. So I think that that sort of modality means that once we get over the learning curve of making the software work well, making the interface good, we're going to be in a situation where it's really something anyone could use and can use enjoyably. Where the internet itself, the web today, is like, it's great, but you got to bear in mind that we all have a PhD in web. You know, that's what I always say. We've all got a PhD in web. That's why your parents, or if you have older parents, that's why they don't use the web. They may use email because that's pretty easy, but they don't use the web. They don't go on there and, you know, get a job online or find movie times because they it's too hard. They have to learn a kind of a semantic language that they don't know. And Second Life doesn't provide, virtual worlds in general don't provide that problem, you know, as they scale up.
So potentially you might switch on your computer, sign on with your digital identity and whatever, and then within a virtual world, you do all your messaging, you do all your shopping.
Yeah.
You'd have your avatar doing all that potentially.
Yeah. You can browse. You'll be able to browse the web alone or with your friends if you want. You can, you know, I could, you and I can sit and laugh at YouTube videos together. How cool would that be? I mean, that's great. You know, we can have a night where, you know, we all, you know, as a family or whatever, we get together from across the country and we sit and laugh together, got the headset on, and we're making fun of YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Model for entertainment in the future. I think it's very likely.
So what do you think is the most exciting development to come in the realm of virtual worlds? Is that kind of thing?
I think one of the things that's going to be really cool is extending the interface a bit. One of the things that I think we can do soon, and it's, so our chairman, Mitch Kapor, he put out a little video that's on YouTube, the little teaser thing that he we got. It turns out that there are these cameras that are being developed by a couple of different companies. And they're not in release yet, but they've been demoed at shows and stuff. And we got a couple of them, and we built this demo where if you just put your hands up, that what happens is the camera can see depth. It can see in 3D, which is the technology is amazing, but we didn't build that. It's just a remarkable cheap technology, so that the your laptop camera will have the ability soon to know how far you are away from the camera. And what's killer about that is it means I can take the background and make it black. And then I can process your image, so I can find your nose, I can find your eyes, I can find your hands, just like that. And so we have a demo of this guy just taking his hands and flying in Second Life just by like going like this, flying around, and then like going like this to like land, and it's a really amazing video that's on YouTube. It's gotten a ton of views. A lot of people are looking at it. But I think that direction for the interface, I think the more pragmatic thing is, if you're in a meeting in Second Life like we are right now, why didn't we do this in Second Life, right? Well, the voice quality is great. I mean, there's no reason not to with the voice. It's 3D. It sounds incredible. The thing is that I can't do this, and it does matter. You know, and I can't measure how attentive you are, and you're nodding right now, and that's telling me something. If the camera can see you with that camera, we can just make your avatar's upper body move exactly like you.
Mm.
So there's that. I think that's a technology change. It'd be quite interesting because potentially these cameras are going to be very cheap, and you know, it's this Minority Report interface. That's the other thing is you can also, like, if you want to move that cup in Second Life, you just put your hand up and you go like that, and you move it. You know, because again, it can see your hands, so it can see you making gestures. And we have a demo of that coming too that he's been working on.
And do you see all of this having a big impact on the real world in terms of, you know, conferencing will mean fewer business travelers, means fewer flights and carbon emissions, and high street retailers might suffer because more and more people will shop online if it's done well in a virtual space. I mean, are there all sorts of consequences we haven't even thought yet in terms of how this is going to affect our daily lives in the real world?
I think the big thing that's going to happen, I'll make the prediction, the big thing that's going to happen really soon, and it's just our fault, I mean, we just need to make it easier to get started, which is going to be, you know, our mission, you know, for the next, until it's done. Business meetings, people are going to start having business meetings in there, which means big impact on travel. If you really can make it fun to sit and do this, and you wanted to interview me? Why? You want me to fly to London? Really? I mean, it's 11 hours. I mean, how important is the business meeting? But if we can make it like this, I mean, why would we do that? I mean, especially if we can make it kind of fun, right? Which it kind of is, you know, in the virtual world. I mean, we can go somewhere weird and, you know, we can sit in something that's like the Soho Hotel. So my prediction is that basic collaborative working together in the virtual world, in a persistent environment, you know, this is my company's little meeting room and we just meet here every week for our team meeting. That could have a substantial impact on travel. You know, I don't know what percentage of air travel is business travel, but it's like 70 or something. It's very high. And I think that could be a very big impact, especially for short-haul travel, you know, more so than international. I think with international, it's exciting, and, you know, people are like, oh, I must go to London to, you know, have a meeting. Yeah, well, sure. But I think that if you're talking about going from San Francisco to San Diego, what fool would fly an hour and a half each way for a meeting the same day? I mean, it's just ridiculous. You'd use something like Second Life. So I think that change is quite, that will be quite high impact, huh? And it's environmentally desirable.
Guardian Unlimited.